Full service radio.
Peace. I'm Maps Glover, performance and visual artist here in Washington, D.C.
This is Holly Bass, performance artist from Washington, D.C., and I'm here at Full Service Radio. We are preparing for a performance of Sherman Fleming's sort of seminal work, Pretending to Be Rock. Holly Bass, Maps Glover, restaging an iconic piece of American performance art by Sherman Fleming.
We had the pleasure of talking to Sherman Fleming himself, and take a listen. Greetings, greetings. It's your favorite friend, Maps Glover, here at the Line Hotel. I'm sitting here with the amazing, incomparable Holly Bass. And on the line, we also have Mr. Sherman Fleming himself.
Oh, hello.
Hey, Sherman. So good to hear your voice. So
I kind of
want to start this this impromptu episode by kind of first asking Holly and Sherman to kind of explain yourselves as artists and kind of how you came to together for this project that we're doing.
Sure, I'll start. So I met Sherman when he was still living in D.C. in the mid-90s, and I had the opportunity to see him perform Pretending to Be Rock, which Maps and I are going to recreate at DCAC on Thursday, June 20th. And it was one of those things. At that time, I was mostly doing like spoken word poetry and dance. But I really feel like seeing his performance sort of planted the seed, and that took like maybe, you know, 10 years to sort of gestate and develop. And then a few years ago, I was like, hey, man, we should do a project. And he was like, I don't know. I mean, Sherman, do you want to jump in? And
Well, yeah. I mean, the only reason why I had reservations is because, you know, my past experience with collaborations, it's really hard to do. And as much as I wanted to, it was like, to me, it's easier said than done. And, but I really just sort of appreciated your enthusiasm and your stick-to-itiveness. And, so now, what was it? We really started in earnest about 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'd come down to D.C. or you'd come up to Philly and we'd work on this. And all the while also looking for venues to show our work.
Very cool. So let's backtrack a little bit and explain what Pretending to Be a Rock is. I feel like I'm sitting in like the midst of, so like, Sherman, you kind of set this performance art in motion, right? Like you created this moment that existed. Can you kind of talk to us a little bit about Pretending to Be a Rock and what the inspiration behind the piece is?
Sure. Well, first off, the first time that I had performed Pretending to Be Rock, it was in 93, actually New Year's Eve in 93 in Raleigh, North Carolina. So that's where the piece premiered. But it actually took me, I'd say, about 15 years to do. It started off with a sketch in my sketchbook, and I just kept looking at it and doodling with it over a 15-year span. And then I did a performance prior to Pretending using wax, because I wanted to play with it and understand its properties and what have you. So I think I had to work up the nerve and the muster to actually do the piece. And the piece was basically, it was based on a photograph that I had seen in an old magazine. National Geographic had put out a magazine called Nat Geo, which was a large format photo magazine. And I saw a ritual of native Australians were performing in the middle of a desert, and they were sort of covered in eagle down and blood, and they were kneeling, and they were facing each other with this animal entrails between them attached to their foreheads, and they had to sort of move around a concentric circle imperceptibly throughout the day, presumably to track the arc of the sun. And I was just really sort of impressed with just the concentration, the determination, and just the whole wonder of the of that photograph, that I wanted to do something that evoked those qualities, not necessarily copy that, but wanted to evoke those qualities of stillness, imperceptibility, duality, and that's how the piece came about.
Wow. I mean, so as I'm about to, Holly and I are about to really step into this space that you did a few times. Like, how many times did you perform this? And really, like, what? Why, Sherman? Why? Why did you?
You know, it's interesting. I let's see. So 93 was the first time, and then let's see. I think I performed it around five times.
Five times, and yeah. So as Holly and I have been preparing for this, we understand like how much of the body is really being pushed to the limit. I would love to hear from both of you as a young performance artist, like, what is it about performing that has really kind of drawn you into wanting to continue to do this type of work?
From me or from Sherman?
Both of you. I'm super curious, just as a performer.
I mean, I think there's a mutual fascination with the limits of the body and the connection between the body and the mind. And this idea that if you put the body in a sort of space of being challenged, at some point it's like your mind breaks open to this, to these other possibilities. I certainly experienced that when I performed Sherman's other work, which, Max, you were there and saw it, yeah. So
yeah, like, can you tell everybody like a little bit about that?
Sure. So Something Akin to Living is another Sherman Fleming work, and in that piece, I'm going to describe them as two wooden obelisks, and the performer is in the center, and a second collaborator measures and saws and cuts pieces of wood and places them in between the wooden obelisk and the body. So the body becomes kind of like the center point or the fulcrum for all of balancing and holding all of this sort of pressure that's coming in from the pieces of wood. Mm. And, you know, I think when you describe it, it sounds simple, but when you experience it, it's quite profound, actually. And so there's something about that quality in performance art. When you describe something, oh, okay, the performer's going to be on all fours and wax is going to drip on them. That sounds really, really simple, but it's actually quite a test, and interesting things start to happen. Sherman, I would like to know from you how you, so we just did a test for like 5 or 10 minutes, and I was like, oh my God, how did he do this for hours on end?
Oh,
with the wax.
Oh, with the candle?
Yes.
Ah.
And then you did it again. You weren't like, well, I did that once and I survived. Like,
you did it.
You were like, let me do this four more times. I don't know. Cause
I think the thing is that I think, well, like all artists, you do it and then you see, you know, I could have done it this way or I could have considered it this way. So it's a piece that I think is always sort of coming into being. And I think that's one of the, I guess that's one of the dimensions of performance, is that you're constantly working on a piece. Not that that is any different from, you know, you're working on a visual art piece.
Hold up,
because
Sherman,
you always want to, you know, you always want to get it right, you know.
Sherman, but you're talking about putting your butt, like this candle wax is falling, Sherman. Like this candle, it's hot, and you're talking about it as if it's this painting. Like, I want people to understand the amount of like courage, bravery, like the amount of strength that requires. You're not just creating something and then going back to your studio to work on the painting, like, I want to paint this better this time. You're putting your body in this space, and I really want you to like Yeah, like, how do you get to that point?
And how did it feel? Because I felt like little hot needles were, like, falling on my back.
You know what? Okay. There are two things. First of all, I have to say that I want to make connections to artists that, when I was in school, really sort of inspired me. Because I just didn't, you know, I just didn't know what I wanted to do. You know, of course, you're making objects, but I didn't want to, I just didn't know. And I came across an old article in a magazine called Art International, and they had featured Adrienne Piper. And I'd never heard of her. Mm. And she was doing in this one piece where she dressed as a man in an afro, and her performance was sitting on a city sidewalk and sort of wolf whistling at women as they passed by. And I thought that was, for me, that was the most bizarre thing I had ever seen. But what I was impressed by was her courage, her bravery to do such a thing that in an interior way, you know, hey, I'm making a piece. But to the outside world, she's just this obnoxious dude that, you know, that women have to suffer. And so it was like this thing that I was like really struck by. And then subsequently I saw other pieces of hers that she would like walk down the city street handing out business cards, or, you know, things that she would do that would draw attention to, but at the same time people would be wary of. And I love that sort of dichotomy that she created. So I was really sort of impressed by her. And then other artists that I was impressed by, and I wanted to, so I love that whole idea of doing something that was real, interactive, and something that would endure, not only in a sort of a time-based way, but also something that you would return to. So that's one thing. So I was inspired by Adrienne's work. But the other thing is, in terms of, it's what you said, Holly, about the limits of the body. And I guess I set myself up in this performance and other performances to see if, can I actually do this, A, and how long can I do this, B? So as much as I rely on the audience to give me the energy to do the piece, it's really about, you know, sort of like a test of myself to see how long I can endure this space or this state that I'm in.
Wow. So we're all joined by Maxwell Young, who's one of the co-hosts of the show.
Hello.
Welcome. Greetings. Sherman's on the line. You know, we here.
All right,
we're
hello.
Getting that real info right now from the
source.
The beginning.
Yeah. It's a pleasure to hear your voice, Sherman. I've read a lot about you. I've seen some of your archival footage, and I look forward to seeing the performance tomorrow that will be an interpretation of your work.
Me too.
So exciting. So I kind of want to go back to this space that I think all performance artists really, really kind of speak about. It's like the zone. And as I've been developing that zone, I think this is one of the times that this zone is going to be really tested. And so what could you speak, like, how can anybody speak to that? Holly, Sherman, can y'all speak to kind of manifesting and like getting into that zone? Like, what does that require for you? Is there any preparation? Like, yeah. Just curious to know.
I'd like to hear from Sherman, seeing as, you know, we're about to do this piece.
Well,
Sherman, the zone, man. The zone.
You know, the first time, well, let me just say this, that the first time that I did, I never rehearsed, only because I felt that is a difference between theater and performance. If it's going to work, it's going to work. But if it doesn't work, well, hey, that's a failed experience, and I have to come back and do it again. But I think it's in the way in which I approach art. And I like art that almost doesn't make it. It's just like sort of just hanging in this sort of temporal space. And sort of like, how far can I push that before it tips over? Of course, it doesn't tip over, but in some of my pieces, that tipping over, that entropy, is part of the piece. I think that is, you know, just as majestic as, you know, the virtuosity of doing some gesture or what have you. So But to get to this piece, I mean, to be honest with you, it really, you know, that wax hurts.
Yeah.
I mean, it's wax, man.
But most of my work comes from these childhood games. So as I, you know, as I've shared with you, Holly and Maps, it's like one of the things that I love doing was pouring melted wax from a candle into my hand. And I just would delight on how far I could, you know, how long I could sustain it. And just when I couldn't, that's when we begin to cool down. And I would do that as a child forever and ever. I love that whole aspect that I could endure the pain of that and then it would subside. So this is a sort of a multi-dimensional manifestation of that little childhood game that I used to play. Knowing that, trusting that, yes, the wax is hot, but it can't stay hot.
I'm curious, and I'm trying to remember if, I think maybe when I saw it in 97, you were already in the middle. Like, I'm not sure if I saw it from the very, very beginning moment. I really don't remember, but did you make any sound or like flinch or respond, or were you really like in the rock space?
I think what I would do is, when I recall this, like I do a lot of meditation, and so not that I meditated beforehand, but I kind of had an idea of what it was, and I just would just sort of focus on my body and its limits and knowing that it's just not going to do anything injurious. You know, it's just not going to do that. It'll feel like it, but that will be temporary. So I sort of fixated on that. It can't be like this forever. It's going to cool down and it's going to collect. And I'm just going to go for it. I'm, you know, leaping into the abyss, as it were.
Nice. Bro, like I'm just so just moved by this whole thing. And it's so interesting because I always talk to artists, performance artists, and a lot of my peers were like looking for not even just guidance, but like insight into what we're doing. Maybe not always visually, but in terms of this legacy that has kind of been laid out, like you have navigated your way through life as a performance artist, or at least like in your work. I'm just really curious as to like, what was it like before you got to like this point? Like, what was the journey like as a young performance artist kind of like navigating your way through?
You mean before leading up to Pretending to Be Rock?
I mean, Pretending to Be Rock is for me the culmination of like a lot of the things that, you know, you're doing and kind of where we are now. But I'm really just curious about in general, like how getting to I'm like lost for words. Like, how did you navigate your way to even get to continue to be a performance artist? Like, how did you navigate that, you know, life on top of doing this work that in the 80s and 90s, I'm not sure people were really, you know, understanding. Like, what was that like?
Yeah, I think, it's so interesting because when I look at the media, especially the media, you know, anytime the media does anything about art, they always have to sort of do it with a backhanded compliment and a parody and what have you. And, it's like the mainstream really has this strange fascination and paranoia around art and artists. But for me, you know, as much as I do, and I do studio work, but I just felt like doing studio work is limited. You're just cut off from the world, and then you show your wares, and, you know, you're asking the world to respond. Whereas doing performance, you know, you're out there. There's immediate response to what you're doing. And I think people sort of place value on that, whether they are attracted to it or they're repulsed by it. You know, that reaction, that response is what I was looking for. And also, I just didn't want to, at the time I started to make performance, I just didn't want to make another object. I was kind of tired of making objects, even though I was in art school, and of all disciplines, I was majoring in sculpture. I just felt that there was something else that I could do, and I just so performance to me became my medium of choice.
How did your parents feel about that? Because my background is different from you in that I come from the performing arts. So I studied dance, like very traditional, classical, like ballet and modern. And then it started to be things, so I was dancing on concert stages. But then it started to be like, well, what if I do this dance in like a warehouse or in a bar or an alleyway? Like they just got weirder and weirder versus you coming from a very, very strong like visual art background. But like with me, my parents, they're like kind of what I would call like regular Southern Black parents. They were cool with like the performing arts. They could wrap their mind around that. They're like, oh, our daughter does like Alvin Ailey type stuff, right? But the performance art, they're like, whoa, I don't know. I don't get it. I don't understand. So I'm curious like how within your family community or your extended community, people responded to these propositions you're creating for yourself.
Yeah, I think doing performance was just a little bit of, when I say, people ask me, what do you do? And I say, oh, I do performance. They usually go to, oh, you go to theater. And if they inquired further, then I would, tell them what it is and what the difference between performing and performance. But with regard to my parents, I think they just they saw that I was doing something, and maybe they didn't understand everything that I was doing, but the fact that I was doing it and I kept doing it, I think that's what impressed them, that this wasn't just some pastime and it wasn't something that I was just going to let go of, that I was really pursuing something. And even when I was doing it, I wasn't quite so sure what it was I was pursuing. I always considered performance to be outside. It's not so outside now, but it was definitely outside when I was doing it. And I like that aspect because I think that in some ways reflected me as a Black person, that I was doing something on the fringes, on the outside, that people had no knowledge of or experience of. And so they had to come with new eyes and a new definition as to what I was doing.
So what was it like being a Black performance artist in D.C.? Like, what was the experience?
Well, it's really interesting. I don't know. That's a really interesting question. I felt that it wasn't so much that I was a Black person doing performance, but that I was doing performance. And performance was a little bit, it was an alternative. And so it didn't, it really didn't matter where I was doing it. And I literally did start in the street doing it. And then I would go to artist studios and doing it. And then fortunately, there were spots that were spaces that were coming up that were interested in, giving a venue to all sorts of artistic practices. DC Space, Club 930, MoTA, Museum of Temporary Art, and Washington Project for the Arts, which, when I started to work with them and they started to support my work, they supported a lot of what I was doing.
That's bananas. That's just so wow. I'm really like taking it in and again thinking about what we're really about to experience tomorrow, and really just kind of like, I think it will be important to really have that like meditative space before we even like walk out onto this. Sherman, am I going to be suspended before everyone walks in? Like, how does
I think what happens is, and I've done it differently each and every time, is I think you will be suspended, and then Holly comes in. Now, that may change tomorrow. I don't know. But I think you're already there. And then Holly, and then the candles are lit, and then Holly comes in, and, you know, she's positioned, and then the piece actually starts when the water is turned on and the candles are lit, and then we just see what happens.
This is gonna be so wild. And what I love the most about this kind of reinterpretation is the gender roles have been switched, and it's just very timely because now it seems as though that's like a huge conversation, gender roles being switched. What are women able to do that men aren't able to do? What is a woman? What is a man? So how, Holly, did you kind of come into this understanding of wanting to switch those roles?
I think for me, a big part of it was I wanted to get a closer sense of Sherman's process and Sherman's practice. And the way to do that was to embody his roles. And the work is specifically, a lot of it is specifically about Black masculinity. So it only seemed fitting that if I, as a Black female, was going to occupy his role, that the other roles should be occupied by a male collaborator. And also to keep that sense of duality. So there is, you know, I don't think of it as a limiting binary, but there's definitely a deep exploration of binaries, of like air and earth, of high and low, fire and water, female and male. That's part of the work. So to sort of keep the integrity of that, it made sense to like kind of invert those ideas. And
yeah, Holly, I just wanted to add that I think, you know, by and large, biologically, women have a higher threshold for pain than men do. And I just think that, you know, as long as you can keep panic at bay, the piece will go smoothly.
You know what? You say that, and I believe that, but I also think you are special. I think you have a very special threshold, and this is definitely going to test.
Oh, no, man. I'm terrible. This is...
And then you're saying that, Sherman, and then my role, like, no one's ever lasted for the full 2 hours, right?
That is true.
So what is this threshold?
I've talked to you about it as I've talked to past partners. And maybe it is my shortcoming. I have not really described fully what it is you will be experiencing because, quite frankly, I don't know. And I just said, but, you know, you need to become familiar with water. You need to be familiar with how water, you know, splashes you. You need to be familiar with the fluctuating temperature. You need to be familiar with being entirely engulfed by water and unable to move. What is that going to be like? You know, that's all I can say. I mean, I was merely going for the experience of doing it and working within that experience, not I know that A, B, and C are going to happen. You know, it really is, well, I know A is going to happen, but I don't know what B, C, and D is going to be like, but I'm going to trust that I can get through this. And it really is about trusting yourself. And I think that goes to, you know, making art. You really got to trust that you're making something that's important, it resonates, it connects with you, it connects with your audience and your patrons, and it's going to succeed.
I just had a thought about, like, Marina Abramović and, like, how she has this performing art school. And I see, like, that, like, pretending to be rock is, like, this initiation of kind of stepping into this space as a performance artist where, like, you know, it's like a different level of respect because, like, I've put my body through many of things, but this one, like, I feel like it's such an exciting challenge because of all the dynamics and speaking to people who have kind of done this before and the reality that it's going to be uncomfortable, the reality that, you know, it's going to be painful and last a very long, very long time is very exciting to me. You know, the experience, like having to experience that or getting to experience this is just really exciting for me. So it's just,
Well, it's so interesting that you bring up Marina. Who was her partner back in the 60s? Do you remember? Yeah, and the piece, again, you know, I think with performance, you know, it's like you're, at the time, you know, I would see a photograph and I would wonder about it, but the piece where she is holding the bow of a bow and arrow, and he's holding the arrow, and there the tension of the bow as she leans back more and he has to flex the arrow more. That to me was just, when I saw that, that was the most incredible piece that I had seen. I was just like blown away by that. The tensions, the endurance, the danger, it's all there. And that these two people trusted each other. Really a fascinating piece that I think resonates today.
I mean, and that's what I'm saying about this piece that we're about to be doing. Like, it has all of those elements to it. Me and my friends who are, I'm friends with a bunch of performance artists. We, like, do some of Marina, like, we slap each other. Like, we have, like, slap-offs to see who can last the longest. So I feel like, you know, in the future, Sherman, this is going to be a thing that performance artists will be doing. As like this, and I'm gonna use it. Like, when I become a professor of performance or whatever that is, if that's a thing or not, like, I imagine that the professor perform. I imagine myself using this in a lot of the work that you like. I think about underground. What is it? Underground sculptures.
Underground structures.
Oh my god! Like, the amount of endurance that you had, even in that, like the layers that you connected between. The danger, but also like the endurance, and I don't know, it just has so many layers to it. Your work is very different from other performance artists' work. There's this like very visual and visceral response that you have to seeing bodies in the way that you've imagined them. Can you kind of speak to why you're creating these images?
I think well, let me just say that while you were saying that, I was also thinking about Holly's piece with the basketballs.
The booty bounce.
What is the piece you did at the Corcoran, Holly?
Oh, yeah. What is my piece called?
Something about a butt. What is it called? Now I got to look it up.
I know. There's
booty bounce with the photos, but the...
I know which piece you're talking about. So it's the one that's sort of like I liken it to an homage to Sarah Bartman, the South African woman who was brought to Europe and, you know, under the moniker the Hottentot Venus and put on display. And I was thinking about her as the hardest working woman in showbiz, and then thinking about James Brown as the hardest working man in showbiz and kind of mashing that up. And so that one, I did it for 5 or 6 hours, but only because that's as long as the museum was open. Yeah. My concept of the piece, and I would still love to do it, would be to do for a full 12 hours or just until I can't anymore. That was my original intention. But it was just, I was thinking about my family history. My father grew up in a sharecropping family. And so for like his after school job, he would pick cotton in a field from before the sun rose till after the sun set. My after school job was working in like Macy's shoe department, selling shoes to people. And I'm like, so my concept of labor, when I think about labor, I'm like, oh, I worked hard. I got shoes out of the inventory room. I had to climb on a ladder, and then all these people were rude to me, and I had to keep being nice and giving them shoes. Like, that's nothing compared to what my father and my grandmother did to put food on the table. And so that has been driving a lot of my work, is this idea of labor and black labor. And
Yeah. I think there's an... Anyway, the name of your piece is called Moneymaker.
Yes.
And
thank you, sure.
Yeah, I just... Sure. I just think the whole idea of the basketball, which makes all of these references to sports, but also like who dominates that particular sports and mainstream sports. And then it also dovetails into labor. and then the black body and endurance, and then this dance that you're doing, and it gets into, like, it's playtime, it's the body released from labor, but actually it's laborious, and it's enduring, and it sort of factors, it touches on time, eternity, and it just does all of these things. I just think it's just a fantastic piece.
Thank you so much.
It's just so, it's so moving just to think about the way as a performance artist, where you have these ideas and you have these images that you want to put into the world, or maybe you want to put yourself in a certain position for whatever reason, and you get into that space, and then you start to analyze and, like, have a dialogue with yourself, like, as you're there. And I've always found, like, I've put myself in positions where I just had the idea, the image, and then right. Now I'm there, and as I'm here, I don't know why I put myself here, like, why. And I ask myself, like, why did you just, like, what is it about this position or this experience that you needed to have? And sometimes I don't know for months, or like a year later, I'm like, oh snap, like that connected to this. That, how do you, like, as an artist who wants to be successful, what would you say in terms of, like, that process from the idea that you have to wanting to perform that idea, and then having to continue to maintain a career doing this type of work? How do you do that? I feel like either one of you, like, how do you go from just the idea to, like, birthing this idea and having that process when it's, like, a very difficult process? You follow me?
I don't know. I guess I don't think that way. I think this is what I've always wanted to do. This is what I like doing. I think that's how I've approached this and any other. I mean, you know, it's like I used to teach school, and I would tell my students that, you know, no one really cares if you do the artwork or not. You know, it's really up to you. But that's the thing. It really is up to you. You have to figure out a way of doing this, making this thing from start to finish, and be, you know, and be proud and happy that you actually did something, instead of relying on someone else to do it or to help you. And it's really about making something happen. I mean, for me, when I made my first object in art school, I was so happy, and the thing looked like shit, but I was like, I did it. It went from a sketch to a three-dimensional object. I actually did it, and that empowered me, and I love that feeling, and I guess I've just been chasing that feeling ever since.
Love it.
I'm curious about, I want to go back to money makers, just the concept of sport that you have, and just tying that into, like, this players and coach dynamic that's going on right now with you, Holly, Maps, and Sherman. If you could please, if you could capture this moment that's going on right now that you've undertaken, Holly, with this, will be what? Not, how many performances have you done at DCAC as far as the Sherman retrospective is concerned?
So, just the one we did, Something Akin to Living, and right. Then the second performance will be Pretending to be Rock. So right. We're only doing two, and, you know, originally when we were talking, we were going to do four, and we may do more of his work, but we also were intending to create something new.
Right.
So this is, in some ways, I think of it as both living archive and personal research. So that's a part of it. But also to have a space to show his new visual artwork was also important. So Sherman has these amazing abstract watercolors that are just stunning, that are, they're based off of collages, but they're hand-done watercolors. So when you look at them, at first you think you're seeing pieces of a magazine and, you know, bits and pieces of this and that, and then you get up close and there's this, you know, the sort of wash of color and different sort of saturation levels. And it's like, wow, like the sort of craft that that takes. That was super important to me when we were putting together this particular show for DCAC, is to so that it wasn't just, oh, Sherman did all these great things in the past, but no, Sherman is this incredible artist now, and the now is based also on the past.
Right.
And to kind of connect that line, so to connect the line of the visual art and connect the line of the performance art, because I would say, like, I see a line from, like, the work that Sherman has done influenced me to do Moneymaker and to be like, yeah, I'm gonna dance in a glass box with some basketballs on my booty for as long as the space will allow. And then to, when I see Map's work, which also has this sort of, you know, quality of transcendence and testing the body, even if Map's wasn't familiar with Sherman, in the way I think or in my cosmology, I feel like there's a line that connects us. So it was really important for me that they be actually introduced. Yeah. It's like they're like spiritually connected, but I wanted them to be like physically and connected in reality as well, so that we can keep strengthening this like tie of performance art.
Right. Like, when I first saw Sherman's work, after you sent me those images, and I'll let you kind of continue your question, I was sad that I had never seen them before, because I'd always been looking for, like, a huge reason why I started doing performance art is because I didn't see a lot of black men's bodies doing different types of things. Like, I only saw them kind of acting in space in one type of way, and I've always wanted to, like, explore what this black body can do so that I could leave something. So beyond just now, just kind of want all these images to kind of echo. And then when I saw those images, the first image that I saw was the piece that
Something
Akin to Living. And it was just so, like, monumental to me. It felt so rich and just so much, like, ingrained in black culture. And the way that you were just so pinned into this structure, and you were like the sole piece, like the keystone of holding this whole structure together, was just so many parallels to the way that as black people we've really kind of held this country up. So
right.
I was just so moved by that and saddened. But now that I, you know, that you're a part of my life, I feel like I'm, you know, Chance the Rapper, and I just, like, met Kanye, and I'm good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, yeah. The fact that I have your ear to refer to or to, like, you know, pick your brain is just like a gift. You know?
Do you see?
Well, I really appreciate that, I really appreciate your participating in this, and just the whole. I have to say, the entire month of June has been fantastic working with you, talking, you and Holly. I mean, it's been really kind of special, something that I didn't look for, but really greatly appreciate. And I think it's really great that Holly is sort of bridging this creating this generational connection between myself, her, and you. And it's just like, yeah, this is how we keep things going. This is how this type of expression just keeps resonating into the future. We just keep making connections to the past. And it's like, that's something I've always really appreciated. Like, I really don't, you know, I mean, very, very little is original nowadays. I mean, it is original in its creation, but you can probably make connections to some precedent. And I think it's important to establish a tradition of this type of art making, as it is in any other discipline. I mean, there are, you know, it started somewhere, and now this is where we are. And I think it's noble to acknowledge all of that. And my hat's off to Holly for making this happen.
Yeah, you are all hitting on the notes that I wanted to touch on. But I'm just curious, as like, there's a real like canonization of your work that's going on, Sherman, and again, credit to Holly. But if you could take, if you all could take, remove yourself from this moment and just talk about what it means as far as the community is concerned and as far as the arts in DC, because this moment, I think we all feel that there's a certain rumbling or bubbling of real compelling art that's happening in the community right now. And so if you could talk about the need, Holly, to go back to re-amplify the work of Sherman, and what that says to the moment right now, and what that says to people who are going to be watching it tomorrow, and who may want to, you know, step into this realm of performance art, and know that there's a real context that lasts decades, that lasts generations, and what people can glean from that.
Yeah, and I want to go back to also, you brought up sports, and yes. I was thinking about, you know, the Black Olympians who raised their fist on the podium, and then we could look at, like, Colin Kaepernick taking a knee, and this way in which these cycles of movements and political statement and protests kind of bubble up, and because we're still doing the work is unfinished, and, you know, it's something I've been really interested in. The scholar Ibram Kendi, he's, in his book, Stamped from the Beginning, he talks about how, yes, there's racial progress, but racism makes progress too. And so these two kind of opposing forces are moving forward in different ways, which means we have to keep moving forward. And I feel like the artists are always actually at the forefront. That's why we're literally the avant-garde. We are in the front of that movement. And sometimes it's not as, you know, it's not going to be as visible as an NBA star. We may not have that same kind of platform, but I feel like the work we do is foundational, and that's why it's so key and important. For me, I want to know where I came from, and so that I have a better sense of where I'm going, that Sankofa concept. And I want to, you know, now that I'm, you know, an artist in my 40s and starting to get a little bit more support and structures, I want to be able to make sure there's a group of artists coming behind me that are younger, that are energized, but that they have that history, and also that they have that support so they can go even beyond where I've been able to take my artistic practice.
Yeah. Right. I have to agree. I mean, when I was in college and I would go to the art library, there were two books, Volume 1 and Volume 2, on Black artists. Dang. And I would pour through those books and then look up and look at the vast library that didn't have any of those images. It was like these two books out of hundreds of books. And I thought, it's got to be more Black people doing art. I mean, I'm sure of it. And it was just, I think that's what sort of compelled me to not only make the art, but also make sure that it was documented.
I think that from my perspective, it's been really empowering to kind of have both of you kind of look and see that the next generation did need that support, because there is so much going on right now, and especially in DC, where you really don't know where to go. The DC Art Commission is supposed to be funding things, but you don't. They're changing the types of funding that you get, and all these other things, and you really don't know the best way to navigate just being a professional artist. And so it's been a huge, huge support to have you, Holly. You know, really championing, and you had us over for dinner, and you were like, come on, sit down, you know what, let's talk, let's get down to the nitty-gritty. And it really opened up all of our eyes to the fact that, wow, okay, now you have a responsibility. I took it as a responsibility to kind of really carry the torch and really keep this art alive, and the documentation is like 100%, like, that I take that more seriously than anything, you know, making sure that this moment does not just last here. We experienced it, so that was like for us, but you know, the fact that I didn't have all those images or your images when I was, you know, growing up and going to school and really trying to figure out how I fit into the art world, it's just been such a gift. So yeah, like, thank you, kudos.
Yeah, thank you both for thank you, all of you, Sherman, as well, for making the time to talk about this ahead of your performance tomorrow. It's interesting to be in this social media space, you know, and again, touching back on the endurance that is prevalent in performance art, as much as there is endurance, to also carry on that spirit of the work, that energy of the work, which is one of the main reasons why we're here and why we'll be at DCAC tomorrow. It's like there is also this ephemeralness to it as well. You have to be in the space to experience what's happening. Yes, you can see it in these other contexts online, and that's great, but, you know, and that doesn't even dissuade from the energy either that you can experience as well. But at the same time, there is something tangible about the work that you do that is in real time, and that separates itself from, you know, other mediums of fine art. But we're in a space now where everything can be recorded, everything can be captured and seen instantaneously, which I think helps to perpetuate the spirit that's in the moment and help capture what is going on in this context. So again, that's just to say that it's been a pleasure to discover the work of Sherman Fleming, and it's been a pleasure to realize the work that you're doing, Holly, as well. And it's been a pleasure to see a friend, Maps, involved in that as well. And I thank you for taking this time to document it in this auditory way, because that is important beyond the visual experience that will happen tomorrow. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for being on the show today, Sherman and Holly and Max. It's been a pleasure. If anyone is interested in coming to the show tomorrow, we'll be at DCAC. It's in Adams Morgan, and we'll be there from 6 to 9. The performance will last for 2 hours, and feel free to pop in, show us some support. We will definitely need it. And
it's free.
And
so
it's
by
free.
Support, we mean like your physical body.
Your physical body, yes.
We don't even need your wallet today. We just need your physical body.
Exactly. Care. So, and you can come and you'll meet Sherman as well, you know, pat him on the back, give him a hug. You know.
I'm looking forward to it, and I can hardly wait to see what everybody else sees when they look at my pieces. So, thank you for the opportunity for me to experience that.
Yo.
And where can we find you all if we want to explore your work further? On Instagram, on a website, where is that?
So you can always find me at Maps Glover. I feel like that's pretty much anywhere.
My website is hollybass.com, and on social media, I'm hollybass360.
And my website is Sherman Fleming, Fleming with one M, .com. That's where my work is.
Great. Well, thank you. Thank you, Maps. Thank you, Holly. Thank you, Sherman.
Peace.
All right.
Take care.